Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Klimochko. We also have my co-host, Mike Kesslering, on the podcast as well. He's currently on the desk trading some merger arbitrage spreads, so can't make it for the introduction. Nonetheless, we have a really interesting guest on the show today, Mal Spink of Merger Arbitrage Limited, based out of the UK. He runs a successful event-driven investment fund and website, Merger Arbitrage Limited. You can find him on Seeking Alpha and social media with good coverage on the merger arbitrage environment and opportunities and risks in that space. Listen to our discussion with him today. Provides a lot of insights and knowledge as a veteran of the game. So it's really providing investors interested in the strategy, what to be aware of, opportunities he likes, risks he sees, and things of that nature. So without further ado, check out our podcast with Mal Spink. All right, Mal, how are things with you out in the UK?
Hi, Julian. Yeah, things are pretty good, actually. It's looking good.
It's nice to finally be past all that Brexit stuff that had been dominating the headlines over the past number of years. I remember that was a media favorite, but obviously with the current pandemic, concerns have obviously moved, and there's kind of always new risks and opportunities presented to investors with respect to all these macro issues that are happening.
Absolutely. I do think it's a case to be careful what you wish for. The Brexit, a lot of people are saying that they're tired of hearing about Brexit, and there's no more Brexit. They've got something else to fill their time with.
Yeah, exactly. And once we're past COVID, I wonder what the next drama will be. I guess we'll see. Can never really predict these big macro events, but nonetheless, I guess an investor needs to be prepared. And what better way to really be prepared from a diversified asset allocation standpoint is with merger arbitrage, which is a area of the market of investment management in which you are fairly experienced. Why don't you tell our listeners a bit about your background in finance and how you got into arbitrage specifically?
Sure. Yeah, I started off actually as an options market maker some time ago, a few years ago. And actually, it was working for an American firm based in London, but we were trading the Swedish markets, who were quite advanced in a technological sense at the time. I think it was the OMX was the Swedish market, so run by OM Group, which I think might be they part of Nasdaq now. Have I got that right?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I think the world's just kind of going into one big large exchange, isn't it? At some point. But options market maker, and we had a great advantage, a technological advantage, and with our computing power, the knowledge that we had in the office. But you could see that business model had a limited shelf life.
Right.
So I think one of the things of traders or being a trader and having that sort of longevity in the market is to be able to adapt. So by the time that after doing that for a couple of years, I was sent to the US and I helped set up an office there. We were trading on the ISE, which is the US Options Exchange. And that was in 2000. And you could kind of see at that point you're going to have to adapt and adopt and learn new strategies or take advantage of new opportunities. That was the kind of person you're going to have to be if you're going to stay in the markets. That's how I saw it.
Yeah, that makes sense, because many of the guys who didn't, they kind of turned into dinosaurs. If you look at floor traders, which went the way of the dodo bird, and others, sticking with these antiquated strategies that kind of get competed out of the market in terms of the opportunity set, it really lends credence to your idea of progressing and developing and really learning new skills. And it's a discussion that we've had time and time again. What many people refer to as style drift, I like to refer to as progression and improving as an investor, because no trade, no type of investment strategy is great forever. And I mean, you definitely need to move on to greener pastures. It's like what Charlie Munger says, you got to fish where the fish are. And over time, some ponds get depleted of fish, whether it be technological advances or over competition. That's something we definitely stress to readers. So it's nice that you live by that credence as well.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of inherited sort of strategy or that. I mean, I love being a market maker. It was great for you get. Well, I was thrown in at the deep end, and you learn very quickly. That the responsibility starts and it stops with you, and it's a great lesson as a trader to have wherever your subsequent career happens to take you. But that kind of inherited strategy, you're doing something that you've been told to do, and if that doesn't adapt, then yeah, that's enjoy it whilst you can, because that will finish, and then you're going to go into a different field.
And so as an investor, I think it's really important to have some of that background training in something such as market making, where you're really working with such slim margins, right? In terms of the operational risk in something like that is quite substantial. And so, I mean, it's a really interesting area to get your feet wet in investing. And so when you moved on from options market making, what were some of your takeaways with that onto the arbitrage side? Is it some of the operational side, or are you literally doing some market making within some of these arb spreads? Or where have your takeaways been?
Well, I think the one of the most important things is the discipline you have to have as a trader. Knowing that you have that responsibility and you do have that pressure on you as a market maker, because there's a number of people looking at the figures, and you have that responsibility and you have to produce. So you have to stay disciplined, or it will catch up with you. So in subsequently whatever area of the markets that you then go into, you are going to, well, hopefully take that skill and have that with you. It's like, right, I can't just do anything crazy here, because you can't get away with everything forever. It will catch up with you.
Yeah, it's important to note that I agree with you. It really helps starting out on the trading side, because you really get to understand the underlying infrastructure and plumbing driving markets, where a lot of investors start. They just look at the data, for example, closing prices, and they have no sense for, you know, the feeling of the market, how it is to trade, understand the underlying liquidity, trading without pushing market prices around and things of that nature, and really best execution, which is a super important consideration, just given kind of slim margins of various business lines these days. And so you go from options market making to arbitrage. And what was the main thing that drew you to arbitrage as a strategy?
The main thing, I think I like, well, first of all, I've always been very mathematical in my approach. I was always very numerical, and that's what attracted me to the markets, this hugely data, statistical, intensive line of work. And I think at the time, that coming from an options market making background, we were always market neutral.
Right.
So there wasn't, we'd seen sort of various sort of ups and downs in the markets, and as a new trader, you hear these stories, and there was always stories in the office about who did this, someone did this, but at the end of the day, the approach was to be market neutral. And you think, wow, this is really interesting. So we can be market neutral, would not take a direction and still make a great deal of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was profit. It was incredibly profit. So you kind of think, well, hold on. Like, so if this particular line is going to be not exactly dry up, but become more and more difficult, it's going to become more accessible to a larger number of players, then how can I develop a different strategy, or what else is there, or what can I take that's already been doing, been done, and add sort of my sort of knowledge as I accumulate to it, and move that strategy forward. And then, of course, that naturally, that's as a market neutral strategy, that you're almost there in arbitrage.
Right. Yeah, I definitely feel the same way. Where investing is really moving, it's kind of beyond that 60-40 equity bond portfolio, where investors are really, you know, clamoring for uncorrelated strategies. As you indicated, market neutral strategies such as merger arbitrage can really present that to investors, and it adds a ton of value, especially in an environment like Q1 or when you have these big bear markets. That's where these types of strategies really shine, by protecting capital. I always like to say, if you look after the downside, the upside will take care of itself. And that's no more true than in merger arbitrage. And so, continuing on with that point, what are some key investing lessons that you've learned investing in arbitrage? Some wisdom that you've gathered over the years as a grizzled veteran.
Some wisdom. Well, first of all, I appreciate those kind words to suggest that I might have some wisdom. But I think the idea of definitely being, we touched on this already, but being able to adapt to not just be stuck trading one thing. If you're looking at arbitrage as something new, then I would say it's arbitrage is such a wide field. It can be as difficult as you sort of want to make it. It's statistically intensive, or in terms of data mining, depending on what kind of computer skills you've got or market experience you've got. So I would say don't bite off more than you can chew. You start off with something that you're comfortable with, and you work your way up. If that's the way you interpret it, but you don't need to be doing something at the level of as sort of Renaissance capital as immediately. So you need to do something which you're capable of doing and you're comfortable with doing.
Right.
And it can be, I mean, both Julian and myself, our initial trading background on the buy side in different time periods was within the realm of closed-end fund arbitrage, which is a very, very niche area of arbitrage. But nonetheless, as you had mentioned, it's focusing on something like that and then widening your sphere of competence, if you will. So, and with that, and I think you could adapt that to really focus on risk management. So that could be as granular as individual position sizing or within the strategy itself. So that's really interesting. As well, so beginning your merger arb background back in the early 2000s, what have you seen change in those intervening years in this space? I mean, for myself, I've just been involved in merger arb since 2015, 2016. How has that really changed from the early 2000s, whether it be spreads, competitors in this space? What have you seen?
Well, spreads. Let's start with that. like most strategies of this kind of nature that become known, and with the internet, the sort of dissemination of ideas and knowledge has the lowering in trading commissions, the accessibility of trading software to the general public. It's become so accessible that the spreads have obviously declined significantly. I think that is one thing. Also, there's been a change of who's actually doing the buying. The sort of I was just saying that the kind of the stories of old, you know, the sort of the 80s, you know, the corporate raiders have kind of evolved into a more sort of subdued and sort of the activists, even, which, you know, would sort of be, which kind of evolved out of the corporate raiders, have now sort of evolved it again into this kind of more of a sort of conciliatory approach. It's like, hey, let's work with management. So I think there's been a big change, a big sort of not necessarily shift, but an evolution along those lines, definitely.
It's a really interesting environment for M&A currently. Obviously, you know, quite volatile given what's happening with COVID and just wild effects on various companies and merger agreements. You're seeing elevated risk and really a dearth of deal announcements. However, that's kind of starting to turn around in July. First week of July, we have seen 4 new deals announced with National General, Allstate today, Vivint Solar, and Sunrun yesterday. What are your thoughts on the current environment for M&A? And what do you think is the new normal? Will it go back to normal, or is this new environment kind of something that will continue going forward?
Yes, a new. I think there will be a new normal, because I think it's difficult to. I suspect, I'm going to go out on a limb here a little bit and say that. There's a certain amount of business you can do online, but if you're a CEO or you know whatever sort of level of executive, if you can't get on a plane and go somewhere to make a deal, or at least that kind of interaction is restricted, then I think that is going to damp deal activity at least for the time being, or sometime to come. So I can see things taking some time to recover on the deal making front.
Right. And where are you viewing the best opportunities in the current environment?
Oh, well, here we go. I have taken a position in Tiffany's. I was in Tiffany's before and sold out, fortunately, and following the recent sort of spate of articles and news regarding that deal, then I've bought back in. So I'm quite happy to be in Tiffany right now.
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting position. Obviously, the market is quite concerned about you know, that the buyer may try to walk, as we've seen on other deals, but. For disclosure purposes, we're also long Tiffany, and we like that deal, especially given where it's trading currently. Super, super widespread, and many investors, like I said, concerned about potential buyer. But who knows? I mean, it's highly strategic. Deal.
What I'm most concerned about is the traders and you know, these. The masters of the universe, as we used to be called, are now getting our financial news from Women's Wear Daily.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, surprisingly, it's quite a legitimate source. You know, I've been following it for a number of years, and they actually do break fairly reputable stories, unlike other media sources out there. Women's Wear Daily is surprisingly accurate, and you wouldn't think that given the name of the publication, but I definitely put stock into what they say. So that's something to keep in mind. But nonetheless, you know, speaking of deal risk and things of that nature, how do you think of risk management in the context of merger arb?
I think one of the main points that probably doesn't get enough coverage is the difference between this comes from the sort of a general sort of populist articles that you might read on a given news site, is the difference between a stock deal and a cash deal, and how the risks are different, about how there is there is broader market exposure to a cash deal. The spread, if this I don't think that's sort of investigated enough. I don't think that's reported enough. I think people need to understand that that a spread is wider if the cash deal, if the target stock decreases, because it's floor price, the unadjusted price that it goes to is going to be a lot lower.
Right.
And I think it's important that people do sort of fully understand that point.
Yeah.
So for each deal that you're looking at, say for Tiffany's, you don't have to give an exact number or anything like that, but in each deal that you're looking at, are you going in and modeling in exactly what you believe the deal break price would be on the downside, or are you looking at it more generally?
I got a pretty good modeling system for that. Yeah, I definitely look at that because at the moment I've recently been concentrating more on cash deals and looking at what that floor price would be.
Yeah, the other. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. I was just going to say what you've seen in say Tiffany's in particular is just that floor price has come up substantially in the last couple of months as we've been looking at the deal. I mean, it is de-risking slightly on that side, where I'd seen original estimates of a Tiffany's deal break price in the 70s or 80s. You know, with the recovery as it's been happening, you have to believe that has increased, quite materially.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a rough proxy, you could always just look at LVMH's price and see how that's behaved.
Yeah, exactly. It's near an all-time high.
Just to make it absolutely clear, I'm not suggesting people would necessarily do that, but as a rough proxy, you could look at LVMH's price, and it's quite impressive, actually.
Yeah.
I think since October, Julian, was that deal announced? End of October?
That was announced November 25th. However, there was this public bear hug letter that came out, and the public negotiation prior to striking a definitive agreement in November. So yeah, I believe the initial bear hug letter, that process could have started, a month or two before that.
Right.
Because
yeah,
they started with a lower unsolicited proposal at 120 prior to striking a definitive deal at 135. And now obviously the stock at kind of 122 and, pretty massive spread with respect to that. And the market not pricing in a huge odds of success. But thus far, there have been talks of LVMH wanting to reprice. However, they have not commence any litigation with respect to that. But further focusing on risk and opportunity, tell us about your most memorable merger arbitrage investment.
Most memorable? There's a few.
Good or bad?
whatever one I suggest, I think it's going to be a good one. Yeah, we'll go with good. I think there was... I can't remember the exact name of it now. It was when I was in New York. It was one of the first. It was one of the first M&A deals that I was trading, because primarily I was an options market maker, of course, on the IC. And Hewlett was the market maker for Hewlett Packard. They took over a company. I think it was Blue something. I don't know. Maybe one of the listeners can help me out on this one. But the thing was, it was back when they were. The market in the US was trading in 16ths and 8ths.
Right.
So, which was something sort of obviously I was aware of, but new to me as a trader, because I was coming from Europe. So it meant that if as the target stock, that you could almost be on the bid and then subsequently be on the offer, and you're making 12 and a half cents a spread. And I was doing that for quite a long time. And I even remember my boss saying to me once. He said, "Well, you're having a great month. Well, what's been going on?" And of course, I'd kind of parlay it into the into the options trading because I'm primarily an options market maker. And all I needed to do was just buy a few thousand shares on the bid and then subsequently put out an offer and have that lifted. And yeah, it was one of the easiest things I think I've ever done.
Yeah, certainly the fractional trading made for wide bid-ask spreads and much more profitability from a market-making perspective where you buy on the bid, immediately offer it out on the ask and kind of do that over and over again. So what advice do you have for budding arbitragers, listeners who are interested in the strategy, but are just kind of getting their feet wet and learning how it works?
Yeah, good question. I think that touching on what you've said, obviously, about Women's Wear Daily and various news sources, I think research is important, but there's always enough news if you keep going looking for it, and I think that could be a sort of a thankless task. You could spend your entire life just searching around looking for news. I think it's important that you find somewhere or someone or something that you are comfortable with. You like the style of reading. You like the style of the writing. The quality of the news, and it's something that you can understand, and it's something that you think you can use, and then stick with it. I think there's a number of sources nowadays, especially in times like this, that may be a little bit less scrupulous and simply writing copy for the sake of it. Right. So I think it's important that you do your research, but when you find somewhere that you're comfortable with, that's something that you should maybe sort of stick with on a longer term basis.
Yeah, this sounds like a good plug for Merger Arbitrage Limited. Why don't you tell our listeners about what you do online and some of the content that you produce?
Yeah, sure. MergerArbitrageLimited.com, a website dedicated to merger arbitrage. We have a number of articles written about trading merger arbitrage. There's a number of resources, a number of news feeds, news sources on the website. There is a number of additional sources, academic articles, relevant books, weekly commentary. So a whole investor's toolkit of resources that's required to trade merger arbitrage.
Interesting. So Mal, before we wrap things up here, why don't you tell people where they can follow you and where they can get your content?
Absolutely. Thanks, Julian. MergerArbitrageLimited.com, by all means. Sign up, register, weekly email. Seeking Alpha, there is frequent publications on Seeking Alpha. Twitter, the handle is @MergeArbLimited. Of course, LinkedIn. Yeah, Mal Spink on the LinkedIn.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Mal. We love hosting other investors on this podcast, and it's great to have another merger arbitrage practitioner on the show to discuss the current state of the union. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And to all our listeners, hope you enjoyed the show. We'll chat with you soon. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty expressed or implied is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.